Okay.
Oh, this is my
easy
favorite.
One. Another easy one for you. So, moving to IS 16 and agenda paper 7.
Yeah. So thank you. So agenda paper 7 provides an analysis of the feedback on the proposed amendment to IS-16 regarding proceeds before intended use. Before discussing the feedback, as a reminder, the proposed amendments originated from a submission to the Interpretation Committee. After undertaking extensive work, the committee recommended standard setting. The proposed amendments included in the ED are consistent with the committee's recommendation. And so we think the committee is well placed today to provide the board with some insight on the next steps. Overall, many respondents either disagreed with or expressed concern about the proposed amendments. One of the main issues raised relates to the recognition in profit or loss of the proceeds. As explained in paragraph 19 to 29 of the paper, some respondents considered the proposed amendment as an improvement to financial reporting, while some others questioned whether they would result in useful information. In our view, the proposed amendments would provide useful information. However, we acknowledge that some presentation or disclosure requirements could be considered to possibly further improve the usefulness of this information. Another issue mentioned relates to cost allocation, which is discussed in paragraph 30 to 48 of the paper. Many respondents said the requirement to separately identify costs that relate to items produced before an item of PP&E is available for use would present practical challenges, introduce additional judgment, and thus might result in diversity in the reporting of costs. We are not convinced that the proposed amendments would create any significant new practical challenge from a cost accounting perspective. However, we acknowledge that it might be helpful to possibly consider including requirements on cost allocation. As explained in paragraph 49 to 62 of the paper, a number of respondents also specifically asked the board to clarify when an item of PP&E is available for use because, they said, there is significant diversity in how entities determine this. In our view, paragraph 20 of the basis for conclusion of the ED includes helpful indicators in relation to this point, but there was almost no feedback on those indicators. Clarifying when an asset is available for use is a possible option that the board might consider on this project. As explained in paragraph 68 to 73 of the agenda paper, many respondents disagreed with the board's observation in the basis for conclusion of this ED that sales proceeds earned before an item of PP&E is available for use would be expected to arise from an entity's ordinary activities. Some said assessing that the proceeds do not arise in an entity's ordinary activities could justify crediting such proceeds against the cost of an item of PP&E. In our view, the assessment of whether the proceeds arise from an entity's ordinary activities would not change the conclusion that the sales proceeds and their related production costs should be recognized in profit or loss. The feedback also included other areas of comments, such as the exclusion of depreciation from the cost of item produced before an item of PP&E is available for use, and interaction with other standards, and in particular IS-23 and IFRS-6. Before moving to the part of this session, specifically seeking your advice on the direction of the project, I would like to take a pause here and ask whether you have any questions or comments on the feedback and the analysis.
Okay, thank you, Bonson. So the objective today is to get input for the staff to develop thinking for proposals for the board. And we're going to do that in two steps. So firstly, any questions, comments, observations on the analysis? So that's paragraphs 19 to 83 in the paper. Add?
You really received 71 comment letters? It's not that. Yes. It's really 71.
Yes. 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 To expect to to be 710 or 7. Why
not? Why not?
So that's the first clarification, yes? That's no? Okay, so we can move on to...
Okay. So paragraph 85 to 105 of the paper set out possible approaches to move forward on this project. In our view, there are three possible approaches. We provided a description of each approach, its advantages and its drawbacks in the dedicated sections. The first approach would consist in the board proceeding with the proposed amendments in the ED largely without modification. Applying the second approach, the board would proceed with the ED with some modification to address stakeholders' main concerns. Those modifications could include cost allocation requirements, disclosure requirements, or the inclusion of additional explanation regarding testing activities. Applying the third and last approach, the board would not proceed with the proposed amendments, but would instead require specific disclosure of the amount of proceeds credited against the cost of items of PP&E. The board would then explore whether it might undertake standard setting to clarify the notion of available for use, or whether this point should be considered as part of the extractive activities research project. I will now ask what your advice for the board is on the best course of action to follow on this project.
Before we get to the question, is as I read this paper and going back and reflecting the early days of this project, the feedback is exactly what we expected to get from the original input. Is that? I mean, we're not learning anything new in here that weren't called concerns when we staffs first started researching this 3 or 4 years ago.
I don't think we're surprised with the variety of opinions, if that's what you're asking.
Might be.
I think probably maybe with a number of responses. I think the committee members will know this better than us because we weren't here throughout that, but I think that none of the areas, the main areas of comment that Vincent identified, I think they're all topics that the committee discussed before. I mean, maybe the strength of some of the views or arguments are you know, more or less than we expected, but all of those areas probably were part of what the committee considered.
My thought is there's nothing grossly new in any of the major points here. This is all largely known, you know, when we put the ED out.
I think that's fair.
Okay. There must be some observations. Sandy.
Well, I guess my observation was, is I remember going through this saying, we don't know how big this issue is because we don't have any disclosures on it, and so can we disclose what these proceeds are? So, you know, I was very surprised to see the D word in here. I know that it would be perceived with modifications with some disclosure, but still, I mean, the number, I had the same reaction with respect to the number of comment letters, and I still felt like, analytically, how big is this, right? So I went back to my original feeling, like I just like disclosure to, and I know that's not all of what's in the original document, but the number of responses and possibly how important this is, I think maybe reflected in that. Maybe I'm wrong.
I think that the number of comment letters and the strength of opinion maybe tells us something.
Yes.
Young Soo?
I just want to repeat what Gary said. Most of the problems or the concerns raised by the comment letters are the ones the committee has already reviewed. What I'm saying is that we have not issued the ED without acknowledging all the problems or the concerns. I think all the ones that we did not pay enough attention was about the difficulty of cost allocation. I think that is the one that we missed. So I support approach two. We go for the ED, but we have to add something about the principles of our cost allocation. I think that is what we have to do. And also the other reason why I like the approach two is because approach two is adding some additional disclosure requirements on the on the sales of the testing items. So distinguishing the sales of the testing items from the sales of the other ordinary items would provide a very useful information to the users. So I support approach two.
Bruce?
Yeah, I, like Bertrand, I'll be honest, I had to double check at the number of comment letters. I mean, I think it leads to Sandy's comment there, so we didn't really realize how big it was. If I looked at the approaches, I favor approach two. And the reason I favor approach two is I think when I read through the concerns that were raised, I mean, they are valid concerns, whether or not we've looked at them or not. The strength of what people have said to us and the fact that so many people have kind of come out and said that, I think these are valid concerns. And I think that the board should address them. Now, whether that means they're going to change anything or not is obviously up to those of you on the board to make a decision. But I think that you can't put out an ED, get 71 comments, and just ignore the you know, I think they were valid that was sent in. In the alternative, I could live with approach one. And what I mean by that is I think that when we talk about the disclosures, I mean, I think that if we highlighted the disclosures in IS1 and we said, look, guys, if this is something that's big to you, you really should be making disclosure about it. I could probably live with approach one if that's where you guys were going, because I think that we could then highlight disclosures that already exist, much like we did with something like IFRIC 23, where we say, look, we're just going to point out there are disclosures and the stand's telling you what to do. The one I don't support is approach three. I think that we've kind of cats out the bag. We're really starting to deal with this, and I think to try and jump to an approach three now, I think it's a cop-out. I think we know that there's an issue. We know that there's diversity. 71 people felt they should write in and tell us that they think that this is a major challenge. I just think approach three adds no credibility to all the work that's been done so far, so I wouldn't support that.
Okay, thank you.
Can I just ask a clarifying question? Just that whilst Vansel, we've labelled these as saying there's three approaches. Of course, we camouflage the fact that within approaches two and three, we have several alternatives. So we probably were hedging our bets. There's many approaches in there. So I suppose just to ask, if you were going approach two, do you have any thought on whether you'd want to do all of the? You know, we kind of have three buckets of suggestions. Would you do all
there
of
is,
them?
And,
would you do some?
And that's what I'm saying. I think the board just needs to take a decision as to why they will or will not address each one. So I think that, you know, they should look at them all and say, look, these are the items we've considered and we're happy that those are out, or these are the ones we're going to. And even if the conclusion at the end is we're throwing them all out, I just feel that there needs to be a discussion around whether or not those are valid or not, because that many comment letters have come in on it. I think we should at least address them and have a finality that these are in or out and these are the reasons why they are or not being addressed.
Can I just clarify your comment on approach one?
Mm-hmm.
Because in approach one, which sticks with the original ED, like there is no disclosure in that. So there is disclosure in a BC, and what people had said, and Vanson, you correct me if I'm wrong on this one, but I would say, you know, the most common comment we got was, okay, we agree, or a lot of people agreed on the revenue side, but they said you got to tell us what to do about cost allocation. And then the next step was that was there something in the BC on cost allocation? So at a minimum, put that into the standard. And there's also something in the BC about disclosure, and at a minimum, put some of that into the standard as well. So can you just provide your thoughts on that?
Look, I mean, I think this cost allocation is a seriously complex thing. I mean, I say that on the one hand, but the other side is where I spoke to people who were impacted by it in our region. I mean, a lot of them kind of supported the view there that, you know, they have systems in place that will be able to deal with these things. And as much as it's complex on the face of it, a number of the people I spoke to said, we can address this. I mean, it's not going to be fun, but we can get it done and we can pull the cost allocation out. And I think that when you look at the cost allocation, I think a lot of that, it's going to be judgmental. So two companies are not going to get the same answer, but we've never aimed to get everybody to the same answer in this room ever. So I think the reality is if people have applied their judgment and if they're disclosing that judgment under IS1, if it's that material to that entity, I'm comfortable with where they've got to on that.
Because we spoke to mining companies and we spoke to investors, and like the mining companies, and we spoke to several mining companies, said they would want, they said they wouldn't want anything too detailed on cost allocation, but they would want some principles.
My warning to those companies I spoke to was be careful what you ask for.
Just kind of building on what Bruce said, you know, in my former experience, you know, a lot of different companies, costs and expenses are very well understood by these companies. at least moderate sophistication and larger, and whether in part if you're having trouble on making your P&L, the first thing you do is just lean on costs and expenses. You don't know which ones are variable versus fixed versus discretionary versus non-discretionary, and that's so. I think we should assume costs are understood. I think if we're going to give guidance on it, my suggestion would be at one, it's high level as the staff suggested, but it really is we talking variable costs, fully burdened costs, and then not sort of normal production level of costs. But I think it's no more than that, and we can debate which was better or not, but I wouldn't go beyond that. Or you just leave it, look, it's judgment, and make an accounting policy and disclose it if it's material.
John.
Unlike some others, I'm not surprised at the number of comment letters that we received on this. I know the breadth and the depth of feeling around this issue and the breadth and diversity of practice that actually exists across the world on this, so I wasn't too surprised. I support approach two. I know we say disclosure doesn't overcome bad accounting, but this is a place where I think disclosure will shine a light on practices that exist and the breadth and diversity of those practices. And it's probably somewhere where disclosure will help to maybe rein in and narrow the breadth and diversity of the accounting over time. So I do think disclosure is, there should be a primary focus on what would be really good disclosures here for investors. I'm going to parrot my retiring committee member on that. About the importance of disclosures. But I do think the other parts of approach two I would also focus on. I do think there's lots of cost allocation and cost attribution guidance in the literature. There's IFRIC 20, and I know most mining companies will shoot me for mentioning IFRIC 20, but there is IFRIC 20, which is all about cost allocation. There's guidance in IAS 2 about allocating costs. So I think some of that could actually be fleshed out and made part of the answer here. I think the other big issue here is obviously what capable of operating in the manner intended by management is. And I think, again, guidance could be provided as to what that means and does not mean, because I think there's confusion and diversity on how people interpret that particular phrase. So I would be a big supporter of approach two.
Thank you. You mean approach two because it's got disclosure in the second, but not just approach three, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would go approach two. Approach two includes incorporate specific disclosure requirements, so I would.
Could I just ask? I put my card up because I wasn't sure back on Sandy's comment whether Sandy, you were saying you support.
Yeah, it was three or two. Yeah, I know what you mean.
I guess two being could also be read as approach one, but focus on disclosures and making changes in the sense of incorporating disclosures. I knew you emphasized the importance of disclosures. I understood that. I didn't understand which recommendation that drove me to.
Yeah, that was intentional. I wasn't actually sitting to say whether it was two or three, right? I think when this issue first came up, my comment or question was, how big is this issue? If memory serves me correctly, it came from ESMA. And without any disclosures, you don't know how big the red box is, right? So you don't actually know how big the proceeds are, and you don't know what the costs are. So I guess maybe that leans me more to three than two, but we've done a lot to justify doing something. So I don't really, because
I wasn't clear, I was just...
Yeah, no, I mean, that's sort of the struggle that I have is that 71 people commented, how much are those proceeds, right, that they're worried about? That's my question. Because the costs are, you know, in line with that.
Okay, now, Claire, did you want to come in?
Yeah, just briefly, just to comment on the proceeds. We spoke to an investor and we spoke to the mining companies about that, and like the investor said specifically, they would find that information useful to have, and they said they always ask for that information and generally get that information from the mining companies, and the mining companies don't generally have a problem with providing that. In terms of the magnitude, I mean, I'm talking about extractives, I mean, I guess yesterday we were talking about someone with a I don't know, it was about a 50-year life, I don't know how many billion-dollar project was it yesterday. Was it 50 billion? It was a huge project, and they had a lengthy commercial development period, whereas in other industries it would be a lot less. So to some extent, in the extractive and petrochemicals, where they've got these longer ramp-up periods, it could be some pretty big numbers, and it would be interesting to see what they are.
But I forget who else said, you know, I mean, these companies also have very sophisticated cost allocation methods already. Maybe they're not putting it in the same category, but it's they've got methodologies already. So maybe that puts me back into, you know, because I think they can do something.
And some have specifically said, like, in terms of ERP systems, they've got something in place, what to do. So they could do something, and it's their counter view was they'll take away the diversity on a revenue side, but different companies are going to be doing it differently. So depending on what guidance we may or might not give, you get more diversity there. So it's, you know, but...
Okay. All right, I'm going to go to the... I've noted you, Reinhardt. So, I'm going to come to the regulator's corner next. So, Marie?
I think we also support approach two because of the number of comment letters received, and I think it's something to do in terms of summer setting, regarding what exactly could be the additional modification. We saw that at least some of the BC can be put in the standard, and as unfortunately, it's always a lot more easy when the elements are in the standard and not as BC, so I think that's something which both would appreciate. And regarding the disclosure, having specific disclosure is always a lot more easy for us when it's the general disclosure on ES1, so I think a very specific one will be also helpful on that matter.
Okay, thank you. Jennifer?
Yeah, just following on from what Marie said, I think also to be supportive of alternative two. One thing, because the IASCO letter was referenced in the paper in a couple places, we went back to the letter, and this was, even though it was a short comment letter, this was a particularly difficult one to write, as I recall, because there were a lot of comments from our committee one group about the cost side of things and just concern about I think maybe just underlying this discomfort of regulators where is it where we're supposed to draw the line, is there something we're supposed to enforce in terms of the cost, understanding that it's going to require judgment, there are going to be different ways that the companies go about figuring out the cost side of things. And so we tried to give some examples of where we thought there might be difficulties, and given you know, some of our members have a very big extractive industry in their jurisdiction, those questions about mining came up as well. So I want to reflect on that. I think one additional disclosure point, there's one disclosure under approach three that I didn't see included under approach two, which is, I guess it's, so it's 99B in the paper, where it talks about a description of how an entity has determined the date at which PP&E is available for use. It seems like that would be worth adding to approach two if we're going to do that.
Thanks, Jennifer. Reinhardt?
Yeah. So I guess the way I approach it is to say, given the number of comment letters and the number of concerns that were raised, by process of elimination, I would not be supportive of approach one. I certainly see the merits of approach two, but the one thing that troubles me about approach two is the fact that many respondents came back and said that one of the biggest issues, and I think we've talked around this table that, in the view of some, that the biggest issue is determining when the asset is capable of producing as intended by management. And I think, Vincent, as you said, what troubled me was the fact that despite the fact that there was some, you know, some principles in the basis for conclusion, no one commented on that. And I don't know if that's because people didn't think it was helpful or didn't go far enough or what the case may be. And so, as I say, the one hesitation I have with approach two is the fact that that issue about when the item is capable of producing as intended by management, it is a big issue. And that when I think back, that seems to be the underlying issue that was raised by the original submission. Because I think back, the issue was that the entity was in the pre-production stage or whatever you want to call it for multiple years, and significant amounts of revenue had been generated during that period of time. as I say, I could see approach two. On the other hand, I acknowledge what Bruce said about approach three. It sounds like giving up. I guess what I was thinking of in approach three was more along the lines of, is there an opportunity to address that specific issue about the point in time at which the pre-production stage is over and do some work in that area, not abandon the rest, have some interim requirements for disclosure in the meantime, but make sure that we do come back with, you know, the proposals as expanded in approach to, with, you know, the possibility for dealing with the other issue, which is when are you not in production. So those are my thoughts. As I say, I'm a little bit troubled by the feedback that was received as to the extent of and significance of that issue, and yet approach two doesn't really deal with it.
Thank you. Carl?
Thank you. I'm also in favor of approach two, but I would not touch in the testing definition, and I also would not deal with Reinhardt's concern. It's a valid concern, of course, but I would not address under this project. I would address it in additional projects.
So in relation to the definition of testing activities, so you would just suggest keeping the definition?
Yes, keeping the definition and would not expand the topic Reinhardt just said, specifically in this exposure draft. I think we need to deal with that, but in another situation.
Bertrand?
I'm not that familiar with this issue, but I did some outreach, and what I understand is that some may test the plant they are currently they are building, and obviously when they have proceeds, they sell the proceeds. The production that comes out of the test is effectively sold, and they receive proceeds. And what they currently do is applying 17E of IS-16. The proceeds are rather not that big, not that significant. So it seems to me that effectively it makes sense for their case to do that, to net the proceeds from the capitalization costs of the PP&E. At the same time, I perfectly appreciate the fact that for extractive industries, the impact might be far more significant, and the issue the magnitude of the impacts might be far more significant. And then, why not considering approach three? Not that the main reason is that if it's mostly extractive industries that are impacted, then let's amend IFRS 6 so that, or whatever standard in oppression for them, just to reduce the effect of these requirements to those that are the most impacted, and not impact everybody on this issue. So I would lean rather for approach three for this reason, mostly. And then, obviously, I'm very sensitive to Sandra's concerns to get disclosures to assess the magnitude of the impacts for those that would not fall under an amended IFRS 6 or whatever, i.e. for those that are not extractive industries.
Thank you. Andrew?
I'm one of those people who quite likes IFRS 15. And when I look at that, I find that I have quite a difficult time not viewing these early sales as being something that gives revenue of some kind. And so if I look at the three approaches, that rather takes me away from approach three, at least one or two. Having said that, I do appreciate the comment in paragraph 99B, and there is an issue around that I'll come back to in a minute. When it comes to approach one or two, I think I'm more drawn to approach two. Couple of reasons for that. One is that it may be useful to do a bit more work to help people understand exactly when something is ready for its intended use. But I also wonder whether we could get to something which would give a lot of the information that we are wanting to get with a slightly simpler approach. I understand that a number of entities said we've got sophisticated ERP systems, we can do a cost allocation. Quite a lot of other ones don't. And so there is an issue around there of what do you do. So one possible way of doing it might be to say, well, just identify what your direct costs are. Because we've already had feedback that says the profit margins that you'll report from this income are not going to be the same as the ones you'll report on an ongoing production basis. So I'm not quite sure that we need to worry terribly much about that. What we're really interested in is isolating the revenue that you get, and I think any direct costs associated with that revenue-generating activity that aren't part of the cost that you would otherwise have capitalised in the asset. So that might simplify things a little bit. A little bit more in disclosures, perhaps, but it really depends. For example, if we were saying that for some entities this is very significant, then does that mean that there should be either required disaggregation of revenue or even a required line item in the face of the primary statement, which would then take into an entity that's got multiple operations at various different stages? I'm just thinking of the information supply that we have here. So it's just a few things to think about.
Thank you. Tony?
So perhaps a little bit like Andrew, I'm a revenue guy, and I also struggle with not presenting the proceeds of testing or any other proceeds during the development of the asset as revenue. It seems to me to fit squarely in the into the scope of IFRS 15. But having said that, I acknowledge the depth of feeling that has come through the comment letters. And it perhaps to an extent makes me wonder how much that there must be a material issue. So it does beg the question, well, if there's a material amount of income, that does really put the focus on the question of when is something ready for use? Is it not ready for use if it's generating a significant amount of income? Which brings me around to saying that feels like something that could usefully be explored. And I think if we don't do anything, the tension between IFRS 15 and IAS 16 is going to exist. The tension that gave rise to the initial question is going to remain, which is it proceeds up to the costs of testing, or is it all proceeds? So it does seem to me that there is a question or several questions that need to be addressed. As a minimum, I think the disclosure needs to be enhanced. I think if the board was going to go ahead with a variant of approach two, then it seems to me that part of that process should be considering whether depreciation is included in the costs, which gets to considering whether or when an asset is ready for use. So I think as a minimum, I think that the disclosures have to be enhanced. But I'd be thinking that if the board is that we can't do the revenue piece without doing the cost piece. And if the board's going to think about the cost piece, then I'd suggest the board ought to think about the inclusion of depreciation, which gets to thinking about when an asset is ready for use. So rather than sort of distinguishing between two and three, I'd say that as part of thinking about addressing the cost question, the board does think about the ready-for-use question.
So, Tony, just to understand, I think what you're saying, I think in your explanation of saying you wouldn't distinguish two from three, is you're saying somehow you think it's, in dealing with this question and getting the revenue number in the right place, which is reported as revenue in P&L, you would still also somehow do something around the available for use line? Is that right?
I think rather than giving up, so I guess approach three is saying let's enhance disclosures and as a second step at some stage in the future, the board might or might not end up thinking about the question of when an asset is ready for use. I think I agree with the feedback that says you can't just tell folks to put the credit in the income statement without addressing the cost, which I think is consistent with what a lot of people have said. And that if the board is going to have that conversation, mm-hmm. then one of the key costs that also comes through the comment process is depreciation. And if you're going to have that thought process, at least think about whether you can address the use question. So not, if you like, compartmentalise it and say, if you do approach two, you don't think about when it's ready for use. If you use approach three, then it's only disclosures. And I think that was, I think, John, that's kind of similar to the way that you articulated it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was interesting, like, when we talked about internally, because it's, you know, you get revenue in the right place, but then it brings along how do you allocate the cost, which is a complex issue. And we looked at some other gaps, which are different guidance on the available for use date. And so the gap between, you know, start of operations and available for use is a lot smaller. So the issue of sales proceeds becomes a lot smaller. The cost allocation issue becomes less significant because less cost to allocate. The exclusion of depreciation goes away, and then you get alignment with IAS 23 as well. But it does then bring a bucket of things to deal with, which would take longer time. But that would be, you know, the ideal scenario.
Yeah, I mean, suppose for me, I was only thinking if there's questions that it's not that if I had sitting in my pocket a magic solution for dealing with that, I wouldn't think it's a wonderful way forward. I was just thinking that it was something that I know you guys explored a lot. And one of the things for me in thinking about it is that where the issue's been identified almost seems to be in particular industry sectors. And once we start to look at that language, I would personally love to do, it's almost, it has the potential, you know, to affect everybody in a sense.
I guess the way I was trying to articulate it was not necessarily seeing two and three as being mutually exclusive.
Yeah.
Not saying that there is a solution.
Yeah.
And as we talked about it over a number of meetings in the committee, my sense is we skirted around the ready-for-use question rather than address it directly. So my thought was more that rather than seeing them as something that's mutually exclusive, don't say if the idea is to go down an approach two, which is to develop some cost guidance, don't just say today or whenever the board thinks about it, we're not going to address when is an asset ready for its intended use. And if the board decides it can't be addressed, then so be it. But at least don't just cross it off.
It's a question of how far we go wrong, because in the first instance it could just be saying that the it's the operational factor as opposed to the volume and
financial aspects.
Jim?
All right, from these many comment letters received and from my dialogue with the companies and representatives at home, I still hear all these questions and concerns. As Gary mentioned, none of them is surprising or is something new. We all, our staff has nicely laid them out, and the pros and cons. And why is that? Because we're changing their behaviors, what they're so used to. And it's pretty much, as Tony just mentioned, in line with IFRS 15. I think starting from IFRS 15 and 16, and not mentioning 17, we're changing the way we kind of address all these complicated issues. We try to line them up. We have one foundation or one solid principle, and we try to put all the other related issues toward this basics. Not something else. Not so many kind of exemptions or outliners. I agree. So if we decide to put all of them toward one single or one major principle, we should change their traditional or regular behaviors. That's what we're doing. That's why they're so very not happy, because that's not what they are so used to. So I agree with the approach two, which is not so much different from approach one. Because all these modifications mentioned here are incorporating into the existing or similar to the existing principles. I agree with all these disclosure requirements. If that's the modification, I agree. Other than that, I think also I agree with Gary's point that costing is very well known and educated. And if insurance costing could be done, all these practical manufacturing jobs are so much easier and short term. So I think we just need to enhance the wording and to try to get these kind of concepts to the people or to the world so that they understand, okay, 15 or IFRS 15, we have to recognize the revenue. And of course, you have the top line. All the other lines should follow through. That's the difficulties. But we could. We have the mechanism, the technology, or the experience to deal with. We just need to let them know that's the direction we're about to go.
And that's fair. Mary?
I had a question rather than my own observation about this. And Reinhard, heads up, I think it was prompted initially by your comment, and it goes to the point that Sue just mentioned about available for use. There seem to be two buckets of issues with available for use. One is the statement that was in the, I think, certainly was in the basis that says this determination is operational, not financial. And then that was, I think, BC 17. And then BC 20 went on to say, if we wanted to provide more guidance about when is something available for operation, you know, available for use from an operational perspective, here are, you know, different approaches that could be taken. I think we did not get, you know, what the staff paper says is you did not get many comments back on the three alternatives to operational use. So, Reinhard, I said your name at the beginning because you were cautioning about the significance of trying to develop guidance about when is available for use and doing that out of the context of maybe a broader project on extractive, if I understood it. I just wondered, maybe you and maybe there are others who commented on available for use, whether you thought there was the same kind of difficulty in separating the issue of financial versus operational from what does operational available for use means.
I'll let people mull over that. I'll keep going around and people can chip in. Bob?
A lot of what's been said, I don't think we have heard anything new here. I think these were all issues that we had considered. I would not be in favor of approach three. I don't think the disclosure fixes the accounting. So I would be in favor of approach two, primarily because I think we could use some help here in the disclosures. On the cost allocation issue, yeah, I think the board could do a little bit of addressing there, but I don't think it's impossible. I think the allocations can be done. If we find that they can't or it's really hard and you really want simplification, well, here's a radical approach to simplification. Let's just not capitalize testing. That'd be real simple. Not proposing that, but that certainly would make things simpler. So those are the reasons I would be in approach two. I suspect, I don't know if you need to do very much with ready for intended use, because I just have a feeling. I would wait to see if there's diversity after you put in disclosures and that these proceeds go through revenue. I'm not sure we're going to see that much diversity.
Thank you. Bertrand.
And just to illustrate Tony's comments, and maybe I will depart a bit from Bob's comments. In my example, my previous example, so the proceeds coming from the testing phase of the production of a plant or the building of a plant. So the reason why actually the proceeds are accounted for net from the cost of PP&E is because the PP&E is not yet available for use, and therefore it's not amortized. And so that's basically the aspect. So maybe effectively this question is probably the central question to address, possibly, because then if you admit, you could then admit that for some this practice would still be feasible and for others maybe not, because then you would have put a threshold on what is available for use and what is still not available for use.
I think we spent quite a few hours on that a few years back, if my memory serves me well. Okay, lots of helpful comments. Staff who need to go away and cook something up for the board, if you've got anything else you want to clarify or specifically ask the committee for input?
And I was just going to say thank you to Banson, who analysed in depth all the 71 comment letters. I have one, if I could, just question, and maybe I'll try and do it not in a completely open question to ask everybody, but to say what I heard, when we're thinking about cost allocation, I heard, what my basic question is thinking about where would committee members pitch how much we say on this. So obviously there's tiers, there's a starting point that says we could just, if we're going to do something, you know, sort of the down approach to think about cost allocation, we could just keep something at quite a high principled level. I heard a reasonable amount of support for that. I heard John saying maybe in addition to that we could develop something a bit more, but that wouldn't necessarily be brand new, but might feed off words in IFRIC 20, IS2. You know, maybe pick up some of what's in the basis, and maybe actually if we put all that together, there actually would be quite a bit there, and wouldn't necessarily be, you know, creating a lot of sort of new different things. That's where I'm getting the general consensus, is maybe we try to keep at a higher level. We maybe think about, Tony, to your point, just think about if there's anything, and even thinking about maybe feeding off that testing technique, you know, the technical and physical performance. That's where I'm pitching most of the advice being. I did hear Andrew saying that maybe if we felt we needed to go more prescriptive, maybe we just tell people to do direct. But I think to maybe just my more closed question is, the impression I got more from the committee was maybe trying to stick at that higher level and maybe not getting down to being at least very prescriptive in a new sense. You wouldn't necessarily suggest going there. Is that a fair reflection?
Yeah, I mean, I would think there's sufficient cost allocation guidance in existing literature, and there are principles developed for a very difficult cost allocation question in IFRIC 20. I know that's not everybody's favourite interpretation, but I know, I mean, there were principles discussed about how you would allocate costs that are actually a common one activity that's giving rise to two benefits, which I think happens a lot in the extractives. So I do think that there are principles in existence. I think pulling that together and talking about it in the context of this issue would be helpful.
Yep.
To do that, without being overly prescriptive,
yep.
My view.
Yep.
All right. I look forward to seeing what you come up with after all of that. Thank you very much. Thanks for the analysis of the letters. Okay. So I think now we are ready to move on to.